Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
Run for your lives. It's the news, according to me. Well, good morning. For those of you listening on Podbean Live, I was not able to get Rumble up and running this morning. I've been working on it all morning. It has been a very frustrating situation. I have a little audio we're going to be playing this morning. I had to work on that a little bit as well. So there was all these issues going on in the back, well, let alone my own issues that I have to deal with every day of my life. Every time I wake up, it's a whole another bag of issues. It's all there. Thankfully, I have a cup, and it's what's in my cup is important. So it's this morning I have vanilla chai, and I also have some, well, you know, some Cinnabon creamer in there, which is also good. So it's kind of a comfort food thing for me. So this morning, we got, I guess those are my comments. 500th episode this morning. And we are live on Podbean to celebrate this occasion. I was going to be, hopefully, I was going to be live on Rumble. You know, Rumble is, it's a clunky platform. Let's just put it that way. I don't know of any other way to put it. You have to, every time I do a video, apparently I have to put in, I can't save a template here. I don't know why. Why can't I save this as a template? And then put in, like, what I want to do each time. It wants me to drop in this video, placeholder video, apparently, every time I, there's a mosquito running around in my, what is that doing here? That's a little scary. So I have to find a video every time I go to do this, and I don't know where it is. It's not there, so I don't know what to do with that. So podcast articles, Podbean files, podcast sound bites, podcast. According to me, there's nothing there. I don't know what else to do here. That's neither here nor there. So we have for the show, yes, Klaus Mueller, the guy who. He's a wonderful guy, wonderful man. He's written a book now on how to take over the world. This guy he's a scary dude. He thought Corn Pop was a bad dude. This is Corn Pop on steroids. Was there even a guy named Corn Pop? Who would name himself Corn Pop? Yeah, my street name's Corn Pop. Oh, that sounds pretty tough. I'm Snowflake. And this is Corn Puff over here. Wheat Fluff. Whatever. It's just Corn Pop. Oh, watch out. Here comes Corn Pop. Oh, yeah. Corn Pop. He's scared of that guy. So we had, and this is interesting. We have this stuff going on. I also have a backup cup, by the way. It's got some water in there. My backup cup. I don't know how this is going to work out this morning. Nobody's on Podbean right now listening live, but Rumble, I always have people listening on there live, and I don't understand. Hopefully I didn't just push the wrong button. Yeah. So we have all this stuff going on. Now I'm getting text messages now. All of a sudden, somebody might be telling me that something's wrong with this. No, nothing's wrong. So we have... Oh, somebody just sent a message. Did you see Santos's comment on being Jewish? Yeah, I saw that. Jew-ish. He's not a Jew. He's Catholic, but he's Jew-ish. Jew-ish. What the? Okay. Yeah, because he's heard that his grandmother or his great-grandmother, somebody in his family was Jewish and they converted to Catholicism, so now he considers himself Jewish. Yeah. So we have this these issues going on. And I don't know. A couple of things that have been interesting that been taking place in trial law. Now, when you look into the Carrie Lake thing, the lawyer that was involved on Katie Hobbs' defense, or Katie Hobbs, yeah, I guess it's Katie Hobbs' defense, I guess. I think the lawsuit was actually filed partially against her. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a epidemiologist or a not a rodeo clown, despite my ambition to be one. The interesting thing about I'm not a financial counselor either, as well, but I'm not a certified financial individual of any kind. Any advice that you receive on this show will be is just the opinions of this guy with a microphone who happens to have been given the internet. It's kind of a reckless thing. It's kind of like a guy with a bike lock. You can just walk up and lock somebody's doors shut. You're closed. So this is, there's a comedian that does a routine about that thing. It's pretty funny. Just anybody can buy a bike lock. They should be restricted because the damage you can do with one. Anyway, the interesting thing about this Carrie Lake issue thing is the one lawyer he charged like $500,000. For his services. Now, also involved in this, the whole Carrie Lake thing, is this was a lawyer, former lawyer from the Clinton administration. One of Hillary Clinton's lawyers. I don't know if he was actually around when, I would assume that they got to know him back in the days. You have to understand how Arkansas works. Everybody knows, especially in Little Rock and Texarkana, that area, everybody in the bigger towns in that area, you know, you have to have a lawyer as a friend. You have to have it's the lawyers run Arkansas. It is like a mafia down there. At least this is the way it used to be. It was at least 20 years ago it was this way. And I doubt that it's changed at all. Now, I don't know whether they're all a part of the Mason thing or not. The Masonic Lodge. They might very well be. They tend to be the people who are involved in all the running of the shows. They go under the covers, undercover, very, very well. They're very quiet in the community. It's a very creepy society, by the way. But then you got Klaus Schwab. I always want to call him Klaus Mueller. I used to know a Klaus Mueller, so he was actually a very nice man. This Klaus Schwab guy. Mueller is kind of like the name Miller. And in German, it's a very common name. So I'm sure there's a lot of Klaus Müllers out there. But there's there's one main Klaus Schwab guy out there in the World Economic Forum. He's a banker, I think he's been involved in the World International Monetary Fund and all kind of stuff. And the United Nations, I'm sure he's been involved in that as well. But he wrote this book now, and he's been waving it around. And he's talking this weird, creepy conversation. I had to cut it up quite a bit, but we'll listen to that a bit later. That'll be after this whole Carrie Lake thing. This one lawyer has been involved. It's funny how there's only like 10 lawyers apparently in the entire country that are involved in most of these cases out there. This goes back to this whole thing of it doesn't take very many people. You don't have to have very many people involved in overtoppling or toppling a government. You just have to have the right people in the right places. You've got these lawyers, these law firms that are involved in most of these cases that are, when we're talking about upsetting things and defending things and all the money that's involved, the money that's flowing. Now, keep in mind, there are billions, trillions of dollars sloshing around out there with no accountability whatsoever. And this money is going into the hands. I saw a statistic yesterday. Mitch McConnell, the head of the Republican Party in the Senate, has been voting with the Biden agenda over 53% of the time. Now, a lot of this has to do with Ukraine, and of course, the latest stimulus or what we're going to call a stimulus. Then we call it an omnibus. There's an omnibus and there's always a stimulus. Every year we have to have a stimulus package. Now it's like twice a year we have to have a stimulus package. Now, the person who started that, by the way, I believe was Bill Clinton. I don't think it started under George H.W. Bush. I think it was Bill Clinton started this. As soon as he got into office, we have to have a stimulus package. The first stimulus package was like $700 million. And it was a big controversial issue. Now, he got it through because he was running everything at that time. They had the House and the Senate. They got it through. It's always, roads and bridges are collapsing. All they have to do is go find some bridge that fell down. See, all the bridges are collapsing. There are millions of bridges in this country. Most of them are not under... Then here's the other dirty little trick that they're going to tell you. That they kind of sneak in all the time. When they talk about having funding for bridges and roads, the federal government doesn't come in and pay for those. They come in and offer local municipalities and states. They say, well, there's funding available. You pay for 30% of it, we'll pay for the other 70%. If you don't go with that deal, it goes away. I was a part of I was always attending this airport board for a while back in the 90s. Because I did business there on the airport. So I would always go down I was there all the time, so I just went down to the board meetings. And say, well, there's federal funding available. If we want to extend the runway here, we have this money available for us. It's a $4 million project, and the government will pay for $3 million of it. All we have to do is come up with $1 million. If we don't use it, we lose it. So is there opportunity to pay for a $4 million project and get $3 million from the government? But if they don't do it, all of a sudden that funding goes away. Why? Why does it go away? Where does it go? If every airport in the country went ahead and did it, that money would all be spent, right? But what if they don't? What if only half of the airports in the country go for that money, go for that funding? Where does the rest of that money go? Well, it goes back in the general fund. No, it doesn't. No, I guarantee it doesn't. It doesn't do that. It's this weird sloshing around of the funds, and it's all cloak and dagger stuff. And it drives me nuts the way they manage this kind of stuff. They pulled this on us here in the state of Indiana. It has changed my opinion of politics from that point on. This happened back in the. I believe it was around 2003. It might have been 2004 in the state of Indiana. Could have been even later than that. I don't know. But it was right around the early 2000s, maybe mid-2000s. And what happened was the state of Indiana, the Republicans went in and said, hey, we need to shave some things off the budget. You know, they were trying to work with this Democrat House that we had here in the state of Indiana. They had a lock grip on the House, and it was very suspicious that they were constantly in charge of everything here in Indiana. So they had this situation where they came in and they told us, well, we're going to get rid of the property tax. We want to get rid of the property tax, and what we're going to do is we want to just increase the sales tax. We had a sales tax that was like 3%, 3 or 4%. It was really low. I think it was 3% at one point. Went to 4% at some point in there. So 4% sales tax. We're the lowest in the country. And the idea was, the proposition was, we're going to raise the sales tax to 9%, but you're not going to have any property tax whatsoever. Your home is yours forever. It will never be taken away by the state. And the sales tax will pay for everything. And this would help to alleviate the citizens of Indiana, because everybody who purchases anything in Indiana, in the state of Indiana, will pay that sales tax. So even people just passing through and buying things here, they will be contributing to the commerce and to the welfare of projects like schools and roads and all the things that we do with the state-funded money, fire rescue, police, you know, that kind of thing. All that stuff comes from property tax. So all of a sudden, the Democrats were kind of on board with this a little bit. But they only wanted to go about halfway with it. So they said, well, let's compromise. This is where compromise gets us, folks. This is, let me tell you how this works. Now, we had, prior to this, our assessor, county assessor, would come around and assess our property values. And they were always much lower than what I would, much lower than what I paid for the house, much lower than what I would sell the house for. But it was fairly low. It was a fairly low assessment of the property value. And I think it was kind of more or less based on a, you know, a last ditch quick sale price on the house. It wasn't an overblown value, property value, which I thought was fair. So like, you know, you could have a $100,000 house, and they might value the house at maybe $70,000. But on the market, you'd be asking $100,000 for it. Probably the lowest you would take for it is $70,000, maybe. And I thought that was very fair. However, this is what ended up happening was they, I'm going to try to get this thing running while I'm going to go. So what they ended up doing was they ended up putting a cap on property tax. So they put this cap on property tax. Well, okay. So let's put a cap on it then. And what ended up happening, I wonder if this thing will just work. I don't know what will happen here. Yeah, it's not going to work. What ended up happening was they put the cap on the property tax and they raised they still raised the sales tax to 7%. They raised the sales tax to 7%. And they put a cap. Now, so we still have property tax. But they almost doubled our sales tax. How convenient. So what they did is they put the cap on property tax, not for everybody, just for one personal dwelling. In other words, if you owned a commercial property or if you owned rental properties, only your property that you live in was capped with a property tax cap of a certain percent. All the other property taxes could go up. Your commercial property taxes could go up. And they did. Also, here's what else they did. They simply raised, when the county assessor came through, all of a sudden my property was worth a whole lot more. In fact, more than I would be willing to sell it for. I mean, more than I'd be able to sell it for. In fact, my commercial property, I own a commercial property. This is where the world headquarters of the News According to Me is. I'm not there this morning, by the way. Again, back with this whole thing, with everything that's going on. And what ended up happening was my local assessor all of a sudden assessed my property at twice the value it had been assessed the year before. Which, you know what that means. My property taxes doubled on that commercial property. So not only did they get higher sales tax, they also got higher property taxes in the form of reassessed property values. Most people didn't even notice this. They noticed, oh, it looks like our property taxes went up. That's about all they noticed. Now, on individual homes, you didn't notice it as much because they had this cap and all this stuff happened. And so the property tax itself was lower. So when they reassessed your home, you didn't notice it as much. But it's still there. If the cap goes away, boom, that's a big problem. Now, all that said, I doubt that it's going to go away anytime soon because I guarantee you it will be Democrats that do that under some kind of Emergency Powers Act or whatever they're going to do. Somehow they're going to do something with that. In the meantime, we have this weird, creepy kind of I I don't know. It's almost dystopian. It's this thing where they come in and they decide on their own, you know, who's going to pay what and what's going to pay. You know, they give certain people tax breaks. This is the one thing that is the dirty little secret to taxes. They always say, well, you just need to pay your taxes, you know, death and taxes. You can't get away from paying taxes. Well, we can get away from paying taxes, believe it or not. There are some states that have no property tax. There are some places where you have no income tax, state income tax. How does that work? How are they able to do that? It can be done. The Republicans try to go in and line by line talk to the Democrats about the fiscal, you know, issues. And they just balked at the whole thing. Well, it's not going to pay for everything. Can't do it. It's not going to make up for enough. You can't charge enough in sales tax to make up for it. Oh, yes, you can. They had the numbers. Well, it's going to destroy the economy. Like that ever stopped them from doing it. What's interesting about this whole thing is how they finagle this stuff. Now, getting back to the whole Kerry Lake thing, you have to understand, Kerry Lake is going up against these lawyers these individuals who seem to pop up all over the place in these key places, key positions that we're fighting against the whole time. And here's another one. This lawyer pops up. It's for a Clinton lawyer. It's all of a sudden defending Katie Hobbs, and he's a very rich, powerful lawyer, which would explain why the judge was kind of kowtowing to the guy. Now, Kerry Lake, in the case that this went through, it definitely showed that there was problems with the election. That's her biggest thing. She's going to keep fighting on this. She wants everybody to know there's issues here with the election issues stuff. It wasn't a mistake or an accident or a... when you take a document that was printed in 16 inches and you try, or 19 inches or whatever it was, and you try to, you print to fit is what they did. Some kind of a print to fit thing where it automatically enlarges this 19 inch document to 20 inches to fit on a 20 inch page. So it fills the whole thing out. When you do that, it distorts the print. It's not the same as if you created a 20 inch document and printed it on a 20-inch page. They created a 19-inch document and projected it, expanded it to fit a 20-inch page. My understanding is that's where the problem was. I could be wrong on that, but that's my understanding of what happened there. So the scanners didn't read it properly. It wasn't in the right scale. It was a weird scale thing. It doesn't just, you know, you can't just increase the font size. It just doesn't work the same. When you have, you know, 16-point font and then you expand it to fit a page, it's no longer 16 points anymore. It's not even 17 or 18. It's kind of a weird thing in the middle. So that's what happens there. Now, having said all that, you know, then they had like 60% or 70% of the tabulators that weren't working. So how many people did they disenfranchise? How many people walked away? They don't know. It's impossible to quantify that. But the point is, it happened and somebody did it on purpose. It was intentional. It was intentionally done. There were several people who testified. This had to have been intentionally done. So I don't know what happened there. Now, having said all that, let's move on to this whole thing about key people in key places. Klaus Mueller. Klaus Schwab is his name, Klaus Schwab. I keep wanting to call him Klaus Mueller. Klaus Schwab. Made some statements. I don't know how long ago this was. I think this was just at the last World Economic Forum. Now, my understanding is now that the reason this came up is because Zelensky now, Vladimir Zelensky, you know, the war hero, he now is apparently going to be Well, you know, he's going to be joining the World Economic Forum, I guess, apparently. Apparently he has enough money now because he's an influential individual. That's just that's a half a step away from being involved in the to getting into the getting into NATO. But that's once you have, you know, everybody's ear. Let's face it, he's basically a NATO country right now because everybody's supporting him, giving him everything but troops. It is a massive, really weird scam that's going on here with us. We're being robbed blind and we don't even realize it. Tucker Carlson's really gone after this whole thing. And he's taking a lot of flack for it. He's saying, oh, you're a Putin sympathizer. No, that's not the case. This is not our war. They're acting like if we don't take a stand against this now, then Putin's going to continue to take over the world. I don't think so. But I digress. Let's back up from all that, all the politics that are going on over there. You can talk about this till we're blue in the face. We don't know because we're not there. And all I know is there's a whole lot of corruption there. That much I can say without a doubt that there's a whole lot of corruption going on there. Let's listen. This is Klaus Schmuler, and he's talking to the young people. I want you to hear how he actually talks here. I might have to play it a couple times because I want to point out some things in the way he says it. Just keep in mind think about back to Star Wars when Obi-Wan Kenobi was saying things like, these are not the droids you're looking for. And listen to how he's talking to young people here. This is very creepy. This guy is creepy, and I will just go ahead and say it. This whole thing is evil. Listen to what he says. If you didn't hear the intro thing, that was Klaus saying that we have to. Everybody has to be vaccinated. Everyone has to be vaccinated. Every single person has to be vaccinated. There's something nefarious about that. But I digress. Let's listen to what this guy has to say.
I created the community of global shapers as a means, as a force to shape our common future.
Our common future. Listen to this again. See what he says.
I created the community of global shapers.
The immunity of global shavers.
As a means, as a force.
As a force.
To shape our common future.
To shape our common future. Now, our common future. This is a Unitarian idea. Not in the religious sense. Maybe so. But in the political sense. This is a one world government attitude. This guy is coming straight from a world governance mentality. Keep that in mind. This is exactly what he's coming with. Okay, now, not that in and of itself would necessarily be bad. The problem is, the more centralized government you have, the more opportunity there is for corruption and control of people. That's the problem. The problem is that people are evil. Or that people have the propensity to be evil, to do evil things because they're selfish. Because they have a lust for power and money and control over others. That is the problem that we run into here. When we put people in charge of things like this. This is why you need to be in charge of yourself and be accountable for your own issues. Yeah, you have the right to be, you know, with great freedom comes great responsibility. And that's been my quote for a long time. A truly sovereign nation is a nation of truly sovereign individuals. If we are sovereign as individuals, then we are sovereign as a nation, period. And our government should protect that sovereignty of every individual. Now, there's a movement called, I think it's called Sovereign Man, I think it's what it's called. It kind of started from Canada, actually, believe it or not. There were some people pushing back on the government there. And it's interesting. it was called Freeman on the Land is what they called it. Free Man on the Land. But you could walk around on the land anywhere you wanted to. As long as you're peaceable, you could walk around anywhere on the land you wanted to, especially on public land, which is kind of what we have here, but it's a little bit different. And it's a movement in and of itself called the Sovereign Man. Now, it's taken on kind of a different life outside of what the Constitution gives us. And it's a little bit, it's got a weird twinge to it. However, they are onto something. We are sovereign in that we have the right to rule our lives. That's what sovereignty means, the right to rule. When we say that God is sovereign, some people take that wrong. Some people think that God is sovereign, in other words, he rules everything. He rules his kingdom. That's what he rules. He has the right to rule his kingdom. If you're a part of his kingdom, he has the right to rule. You are his. You are called to serve him, and ironically, he calls us his children, that goes way above the call of a servant. We're not just slaves to him. In a sense, we are. Paul makes that kind of a distinction. But it's not the same as a slave like you would think of a slave. We're not compelled. It's voluntary. That's the whole beauty of it. It's the relationship of a child with their father more than a master and a slave. This is the uncanny kind of our brains can't wrap around it. It's indescribable, kind of thing. You can't put words around it. It's just amazing. But Klaus Schwab wants to have this centralized government. Listen to what he says now as he continues to go on. Now he's talking to young people here. Listen to how he talks to them.
This engagement of the young generation never has been more important than now, where we have to face the consequences of the pandemic.
I don't know what I just did. I think I just skipped forward and then I messed it up there for you. Let's start back here at this point.
So now, where we have to face the consequences of the pandemic of COVID-19.
The pandemic of COVID-19. So what he says here is...
Where we have to face
the consequences
of the pandemic
of COVID-19. Okay, so we have to, never been more important than now when we have to face the consequences of the pandemic of COVID-19. Now, keep in mind, COVID-19 is pretty much done. Now, there's weird things going on in China. Let's talk about that a little bit. They basically were trying to, they had a zero tolerance or zero COVID thing that they were trying to do over there. Impossible. Again, everybody's wearing masks, everybody's wearing suits trying to push back on some of the protesters and some of the things that were going on over there. The Omicron thing spread so fast that it's unbelievable. Now, they've got this thing called white lung that has happened over there now. And they're noticing that a lot of people with COVID have what's called white lung. Now, I don't know if this is getting lost in translation, if this is just pneumonia, if it's something else, if it's something different. They're calling it white lung, and people have this, if it's a mutation now of Omicron somehow that has changed things. But they now have an outbreak of about 250 million people, I think, at least in last count, which is, that's beyond the scope of them being able to contain it. They're you know, they had all these people and they had enclosed these cities, areas in Wuhan, not in Wuhan, but what's the one town that's very popular for Shenzhen? Well, I can't remember where it's at. And they were, you know, basically quarantining these entire towns or areas of the towns. And you can't stop it. It got through to some of the workers. Once it broke through from that, they had no idea it had broken through, you know, the quarantine areas, and it just spread like wildfire. Part of the problem with Omicron is that it has a lot fewer symptoms. So they were testing everybody like crazy over there, but still it gets out in the general population, and all of a sudden the next thing you know, everybody's popping up all over the place with it, and then it's already spread all over the place. I think that they have backed down on their zero tolerance for it, and they're just now going to be in this treatment phase, is what I understand. Now, there is also, when it does this now, because it's going into a basically unprotected population, the population that they may have had some vaccines over there. I don't know if they had total compliance on that or not. But they also have a population that has basically not been exposed to it yet, much like what happened in Africa. We have Africa to thank for Omicron. Now, my understanding is The last time I heard a health worker from Africa that kind of covers the whole continent there, he was being interviewed. They said there's basically COVID is non-existent there now. They have not had really kind of any kind of outbreak there. It's not come back. It's not really doing anything there in Africa. It's basically gone. Now, what could happen in China is that it could mutate again and become worse, or it could become even more like a common cold, which is kind of more like people actually, before COVID, people actually died of the common cold. If you had a weakened immune system and you were in a weakened state and you were barely hanging on and you caught a cold, yeah, that could be enough to kill you right there. But we didn't hear anything about that, did we? We didn't hear anybody dying about it with a common cold, the common rhinovirus. I've talked about this before. Viruses, when you compare the size of a virus to the size of what is it called? I just lost my train of thought there. Size of virus compared to bacteria. Let's just try this and see what we get here. Virus versus bacteria, differences in simulators in size and structure. So I'm just going to click on this one here. See what we get. And I'm going to have to sneeze. Apparently, I've got something coming through the search engine. It's going to make me sneeze. Both bacteria and viruses are germs. As such, they are very tiny microbes, organisms, agents capable of causing disease in human beings, animals, and as well as plants, etc. Although bacteria and viruses have a number of similarities, they're both microscopic. Example, they're both microscopic, etc. There are several differences that distinguish the two. One of the biggest differences is that while bacteria are considered living things, viruses are not, or are at least places where between living and non-living. This particular difference between bacteria and viruses can be attributed to the structural differences between them, as well as the manner in which they reproduce. Now, cell wall, let's see here, cytoplasmic membranes, capsid. I don't see here where they compare the size. Genetic material, other structures of the cell, scatter cold, home and watch what happens. Size. Another significant difference between bacteria and viruses with regard to size. Although researcher studies have revealed that some viruses are very large in size, the Mima virus is about 750 nanometers in diameter. Viruses are generally very small when compared to bacteria. Some of the smallest viruses may range from 20 to 30 nanometers. I think this is like thousandths of a millimeter, or less than that, I guess, in diameter. Members of the family's it's a lot of big words there. And with the majority of viruses ranging between 10 and 300 nanometers in diameter. Bacteria are relatively large, ranging from 0.2 to 2.0 micrometer in diameter. So this is a huge difference. Well, we're talking thousands of times larger. Therefore, in general, smaller viruses can be over 200 times smaller when compared to some bacteria. Because of their small size, some viruses are also capable of infecting bacteria. And this is my point here, is that bacteria can actually be infected by viruses. That's how small they are. I don't think they did their math right on this thing. I think it's 200 times smaller. It's actually much more than that. They didn't put their decimals in the right place there, I don't think. Because if you take the very smallest virus and the very largest bacteria, I think you're talking over 1,000 times the way I'm reading their math here. But that's not, I think in most cases, at least, I guess they do make the disclaimer, in most cases, in general, smaller viruses can be more, 200 times, in general, 200 times. Now, you think that a mask that you're wearing has that ability to not just scope out bacteria, but also to scope out 200, think something that's 200 times smaller. An N95 is only 95% efficient in that. That's why it's called an N95. it still has 5%. Yeah. So let's go on with this whole thing. So let's continue on here with Klaus. So I don't get too sidetracked with all this stuff, with this COVID stuff, but let's talk about that later.
For creating a more resilient, a more sustainable, and a more inclusive world. You are
a more inclusive world. So let's listen to this.
For creating a more resilient, a more sustainable, and a more inclusive world.
More inclusive world. More sustainable, inclusive world. Now, when they talk about sustainable, they're talking about many things here. Overpopulation is an issue. Sustainable. In order to be sustainable, we have to have a certain amount of population. We can't have too many more people. This has never worked out. They've always warned us of overpopulation. Always. This has been going on for hundreds of years. Well, the world's overpopulated. It's really close to not being able to produce enough food. And yet somehow we always end up with more food than we need. Well, global warming, you know, all of a sudden the permafrost is going away. The permafrost is melting. What's going to happen then? Well, we're going to call it farmland is what we're going to call it. We're going to start farming up there. Start growing more food for all these people, for places to live. That's what's going to happen. There's a lot of weird things like this that they talk about how, you know, it's always calamity. Well, if this goes away, then the world's going to end. No, not necessarily. Let's keep on going here.
You are calling for the international community.
Now, listen to what he says here. You are calling for the internet. He's talking to young people now, and he's telling them what they're doing. He's telling them what they are supposed to be thinking, not how to think. Not educating them on anything. He's just saying, you are calling for the world economy.
You are calling for the international community.
You are calling for the international community.
To safeguard vaccine equity.
To safeguard vaccine equity.
To respond to COVID-19 and prevent future health crises. Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
Okay, let's listen to this one more time here, because this is where it gets a little creepy, more than a little creepy. It gets a lot creepy. Let's listen to this one more time.
To COVID-19 and prevent future health crises. Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated. In other words, nobody's going to be safe unless everybody's vaccinated. If one person is left unvaccinated, nobody is safe. This is where he's coming from. And he's trying to convince young people of this. Who's listening to this guy? Well, I tell you, it's not young people. It's the people who are teaching young people. It's the academia community. They're loving this guy because it gives them that social mentality, this progressive mentality, this we're striving for a better utopian society mentality. Folks, there's nothing new under the sun here. If you don't think the Romans were attempting to go down this road of, look, we are a much higher sophisticated society than any other society that's ever lived, and we are the most incredible, we have the most potential for inclusiveness and becoming one with our government and everybody complying, you must comply. He even says that later on here. We'll listen to that. Here we go.
You are rallying behind the global wealth tax.
You are rallying behind
the global wealth tax.
You are rallying behind the global wealth tax. You, young people. He's telling you what you're doing, even if you're not doing it. You're not doing this. You don't know. First of all, you have no idea. Your 18-year-old Greta Thunberg, you think that she understands the world economic situation? No, these are kids with idealistic, they can put these idealistic ideas in their head about this stuff. And of course, they're trying to reach this generation, trying to steal his generation is what they're trying to do. But listen to this again. He's telling these young kids what they should think.
You are rallying behind the global wealth tax to manage the alarming surge in wealth inequality.
The alarming surge in wealth inequality. To manage the alarming surge in wealth inequality. Now think about this. This is someone who is a multimillionaire who has no issues with money whatsoever. I'd like to see his portfolio. See who all is, where all his money's coming from, what all he owns and what he has control of. The alarming surge in wealth inequality. He doesn't like people making money. John Stossel did an interesting expose a while back. I think it was about a year ago. Might have been more than that. And he made this remarkable statement. He said, the rich get richer and the poor get richer. Our society here in the United States, we're one of the richest countries in the world. And yet, we have people clamoring to come across our borders, not because of the richest people here in the world, because the poorest of the poor in our country are still richer than some of the middle class. If they're, most countries don't even have a middle class. When you have a middle class happens when you have the division comes when you start dividing people up, and politically. With regard to social welfare. When you take away social welfare, if you have a fair safety net system, then you have very few poor people. When you start taking that away, people start becoming productive. They start going out and doing something. They have to work it's not supposed to be easy, folks. Life is not easy. If there's no struggle involved in living, This happens even in nature. When chickens hatch, if you crack the shell open, if they start picking the shell open themselves, if you crack the shell open, they have a very low chance of survival. If you allow them to struggle out of that shell, it sets a mindset for them. We don't even understand it, but for some reason, most of them survive that. But if you crack the shell open for them, they simply don't thrive. It's almost as if we need that struggle to develop something in our character. I struggled a lot. Now, just people will tell you, well, yeah, you're a white man. No, you were handed everything. Everything just came easy for you. Because, you know, you're white. Because, you know, you were handed everything. You know, from your inheritance or whatever. I had no inheritance, basically. Nothing. Didn't inherit anything from my parents, basically, other than character and a work ethic. Now, granted, they raised me. I never worried about whether I was going to have a meal or not until I got off on my own. And then I discovered how tough I can be. I know what it's like to go for a week without food. I do. Now, part of that was because I was just too proud to ask for anything. But I went through a lot of struggles financially. I learned a lot about all that. I was a young kid, couldn't afford to go to college. Finally got to a point where I could afford to go. I paid, you know, worked for a while from, you know, saved up some money, went to 1 year Bible college. Now I never let it stop. I never let lack of funds slow me down. Unfortunately, credit card companies never let me slow down either because I started getting into some credit card debt. I finally found a job where I was making some pretty good money. But unfortunately, I was spending. You know, at first, I was keeping up. And then after a while, I started spending more and more. I started a business at one point. And I was basically funding it with credit cards. And it was going well until 2008 hit. So when the bottom fell out, I had some other issues with the business. And it just basically, you know, there was nothing there. I didn't have any collateral, didn't have anything else other than this debt that I had to deal with. And so the whole thing kind of collapsed. And had to close the place down. I had to shut it down for various reasons. Some were my mistakes, some were other people's mistakes, and some of the fraud that happened in the process. And the economy was just bad. This kind of stuff happens. And it's the struggle that you're involved in sometimes that makes you what you are. For some, it takes longer than others. Now, I'm not afraid of taking risk anymore. I'm not at all afraid of taking financial risk whatsoever. I don't ever want to get back in that situation again where I have nothing. But I will never put myself in that situation again if I can help it. Now, things can happen in life. That's just the way life is. But when we have that struggle, I never once thought about it as wealth inequality growing up. Well, they've got all that and I don't have anything. It's not fair. Well, yeah, it's fair. A lot of people worked a lot harder in school than I did. That's why they're, you know, more successful than I was. They had different talents than I did. They learned how to apply their talents in certain ways that I had talents too, but I just didn't know what to do with them. It's not, you know, everybody out there has talents. I've met people on the street who were living on the street. And all they had to hear was, this is not what God intended for you. He's given you talents. He's given you a means to be productive, to live out your vision, your calling on your life. This is not it. Begging is not part of God's plan for you. Now, it is in a sense, but it's not. And you'd be surprised at how some people receive that. Nobody has ever told them that before. Nobody. Not even their parents. People need very little encouragement, but they need some, and they don't get any in most cases. They live this life of solitude where they think God has just forgotten them. That is no way to live. That's why we need each other. That's why we need to, when Scripture says, don't forsake the fellowship of the saints, we need to gather together to encourage each other. We need each other. That's just, and yet the government, the enemy would seek to divide us all the time. To keep us in solitude, to keep us isolated from each other. All right, let's go on here with Klaus. Let's see what else he has to say to the young people. So this is, he's telling the young people what they think and what they're doing. So let's keep going with this.
You are calling for programs that help you and young progressive voices join government and become policymakers.
You are calling for programs that help you
and young progressive voices.
And young progressive voices. You are calling for programs that help you. Who are giving you these programs? And who are you calling for them from? Is this the protests in the street? Just, we want programs that help us to become leaders as progressives. Let's listen to this again.
You are calling for programs that help you and young progressive voices
join government
and become policymakers.
And become policymakers. join government and become policymakers. Now, some of this speech has been, apparently been edited. Now, I've done some editing on it because this actually was pulled off of Robert Gouveia, his show. I was trying to find his actual mind map. I couldn't find it anywhere on this. I don't know how to, there's a mind map program. I'll give you the resource for this here real quick. Mind map. It's just called mindmeister.com. MindMeister.com. And it's, he's got one on the J6th committee. I've seen that one. I've not been able to find his other ones. And he's got these other, this other one, and it's got this whole World Economic Forum thing, and I can't find it anywhere. So I don't know. Attached to files, browser. Yeah, I might have to upgrade. I'm not sure if it's just, he just made this one public and the rest of them aren't public. The rest of them are private. I don't know. I'm going to have to be a member in order to see the rest of them. Maybe, I don't know. That could be the problem. But this one was definitely public on the J6 committee. And I was trying to pull it off of there, but I couldn't. I had to pull it off of his show. So he's making some background comments that I had to edit a little bit. So this is, some of this sounds like it's edited though beyond what he was doing. So I'm not sure whether that was or not. Now it's a video of him, of Klaus speaking. So I don't, speaking as they say. He spelled speaking with an S-C-H-P, I think. Speaking, like Schwab. Speaking. Let's go on. So this is the progressives. So the progressive voices doing their thing. And let's keep on going with that. See where else he's going here.
To limit global warming, you are demanding to halt to coal, oil, and gas exploration.
To limit global warming, you are demanding to halt
to coal, oil, and gas exploration.
Coal, oil, and gas exploration. This gets into a little interesting bit as well of information that we need to talk about as well. This whole idea of going completely green, solar technology, for instance, solar power and electric power. There's a little bit of a catch here for them. It's a little bit of a problem. And they realize this problem is coming and they're not sure what to do with it. We'll talk about it in a little bit. The whole issue of difference between what they call fossil fuels or petroleum products and the, which by the way, the term fossil fuel was tagged on to gasoline product, petroleum products without any kind of understanding that that's not fossils. We're not burning fossils. We're not burning dinosaurs. it's a total fallacy, but that's, we'll go back into that a little bit.
To coal, oil, and gas exploration.
So not even any exploration of coal, oil, or gas. Because, you know, bad. It's carbon bad.
You are asking firms to replace any corporate board directors.
You are asking firms to replace
any corporate board directors.
Any corporate board directors. See where this is going? Now we're talking pitchforks here. You are asking firms to replace any corporate board or directors. Think about this. What business is it of yours to demand from a company to replace their board members
who is unwilling to transition to cleaner energy sources?
So who is unwilling to transition to cleaner energy sources. To replace any board members who are unwilling to transition to cleaner energy sources. You're demanding of these corporate boards. This is fascism, folks. No matter how you look at it. So let's say I have a business and I'm running my business and I'm doing everything legally. And this group starts to protest outside the street, outside the fence out there. I'm running my business, I'm doing everything legally, and they're out there protesting saying, you need to fire your board members because you guys are using too much carbon And you're not vaccinated. This is a scary place to be, folks. It's a scary place to be because, please understand, this is where it gets really creepy. Really, really creepy. And I think that's where we are, you know, we are headed to this. And I don't think we realize the propensity, the power, the control that they're going to have over us because of these critical existential issues. It's all based on a lie. Every bit of it. Let's continue. Where'd it go? Where am I? There we go.
You are championing an open internet and a $2 trillion digital access plan to bring the world online and prevent internet shutdown. You are championing an open internet and a $2 trillion digital access plan.
You are championing.
You are championing an open internet.
An open internet.
And a $2 trillion digital access plan.
Something about an access plan. Again, this is an open internet, which is basically this is net neutrality. That's what he's talking about here, which is very dangerous as well. Let's
to bring the world online.
To bring the world online, and then listen to how. Okay, so bringing the world online. If we don't bring the world online, then what happens?
And prevent internet shutdown.
Prevent internet shutdown. What in the world is he talking about here? Championing internet accessibility. Let's go back and listen to this again.
You are championing an open internet.
An open internet.
And a $2 trillion digital access plan.
A true digital access plan.
To bring the world online.
To bring the world online. This is the guy who thinks that everybody, every single person should be vaccinated.
And prevent internet shutdown.
Prevent internet shutdown. Now, he goes into misinformation here in a little bit. So everybody needs to be online, so everybody's going to get their information, and we're going to control what we call misinformation.
And you are...
Prevent internet shutdown.
That was Robert Govea. Let's pull that part out of there. I forgot to... I apparently didn't get it all edited out.
And you are...
Prevent...
Let's... I didn't get that either. Let's see. There we go. Let's try this.
And you are... Prevent... To minimize the spread of misinformation.
Oh.
You want to combat information.
Oh.
You want to combat misinformation. You want to combat extremist views in dangerous extremist
views
in the internet.
Yeah.
So
you want to combat dangerous extremist views in the internet.
Yeah.
So you want to combat dangerous extremist views in the internet.
You want to combat dangerous extremist views in the internet. Stakeholder capitalism.
Buy my book.
Will be the key.
Buy my.
This is when he's waving his book around, and Robert makes this comment about buy my book. Now, this is where we're going with this. Think about this for a moment. It is an incredible, amazing thing here that he's getting away with without any kind of anybody challenging it and none whatsoever. How does this work? Where is the church in this? Why are there not pastors all over this country, people who are preaching every Sunday morning, not pushing this, putting it up on stage with all of the quotes that he has said, and then putting up the scriptures right next to it saying this is exactly where we're going? There should be an amazing outcry not to scare people, but to prepare people. We need to be prepared in this whole thing. I'm not trying to scare you either in this whole thing. But where is this going? And where will we be in 20 years from now? Now, some people, and I've heard even Robert Gouveia say this, they're very optimistic about freedom winning. Freedom loving, freedom minded people will always find a way to break through again and win their freedom back. Unfortunately, it usually happens in a very bad conflict. Might I say bloody conflict? Conflict. I think the founders knew this when they said occasionally the tree of liberty needs to be watered with the blood of patriots and tyrants. They knew that this conflict would always be there. And occasionally it has to happen, and it's probably going to be bloody. Because tyrants have a way of cropping up, sneaking in, all in the name of something good for you. You'll give up security for the sake of liberty or for the sake of convenience even. How much liberty do we give up when we have our phone system? When we ask for an app on our phone? How much of our liberties are we giving up? How much of our freedoms? How much of our security? Our things we're giving up? When the government can go to a company like Google and just buy what? In fact, I'm pretty sure Google is actually owned by a black bag company through the CIA. That's just my tinfoil hat idea, but I'm pretty sure the money that came from Alphabet. What do we call these? FBI, NSA, CIA, DOD. We call them alphabet soup organizations. Well, Alphabet is the company that owns Google. Google's not even the company that owns Google. Google's owned by somebody else. Alphabet. Where'd that money come from? It's a little something called black bag funding. Look it up. You've got Operation Mockingbird, which never went away, by the way. It was just changed. The name was just changed. It's a real thing. It was actually before Congress, and the CIA admitted to it. It was back in the 70s or 80s. I think it was the 70s. Operation Mockingbird was a real thing. They have played the media for years. Even the print media was involved before we even had television or radio. Propaganda has been out there forever. There's nothing new under the sun in that regard. But now we have the technology that we have now is capable of actually fulfilling much of the things that are in Scripture in the last days. This idea that the whole world will see the witnesses laying dead on the street and they will rise up. The whole thing is possible now. The technology is there. Until the whole world has access to the internet. Until the whole world is vaccinated. No one is safe until everyone is vaccinated. This is evil, folks. If you can't see it for what it is, that's just what it is. These people think that they have, unfortunately, I think that they really believe that they have good intentions here. And you know what the road to hell is paved with, right? So, I'm going overtime on the show this morning. Of course, it's the 500th episode, and it warrants a little bit of extra content, maybe. I'm telling you, folks, we need to pray for our pastors, for our leaders, for our city and civic leaders, for those in Congress, those who represent us and our rights. They're supposed to be representing us, not just lording over us. And I would invite you to continue to pray for them, or at least if you don't believe in doing that, make your voice known. if you're concerned at all about individual liberties and freedoms, then I would invite you to get involved. Make your voice known. If you would get on your knees and pray for each other, for each of us, for all of us, to be able to find a way to unite and stand up against this, we can push back. It's not just inevitable. I mean, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. It's scriptural. It's going to happen someday, but maybe not today. We are salt and light. We are the ones who are preservers and flavorers of this world. If we just bow over and comply, that salt is gone. It's lost its savor. We are the light on the hill. So let's step out in that calling that we have. That's my charge for you today. So again, it is Thursday, December 29th, almost the end of the year. It's already 10:26 a.m. And the show's just ending, finally. Now, tomorrow morning, I'm hopefully going to have an earlier show. It may not be live, but I will probably get up and record something early. I might actually be able to have a live show. If I can get this Rumble thing figured out, I would love to have a live video show every day with video content and that kind of thing, because that always seems to go a little bit better. It's a little bit more interesting. If I could have actually played Klaus on video, him with all of his stuff going on, that would have been more interesting. But, you know, I digress. Folks, be prepared. Don't be scared. Be prepared. Once again, God bless. Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for joining us this morning. If you were one of the live participants this morning, have a great evening. God bless.